Our Bible reading today is from the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verse 15. You shall not steal.
You know, it took Brother Andy a lot more work just to get up here and get back to his seat than it did to read that Bible reading, but appreciate that. So we are in this study during this time period of the Ten Commandments, and we come to this, which is the eighth commandment, you shall not steal. We live in a world today that has been tainted by the economic philosophies of socialism and communism to the point that many are convinced that the concept of private property and property rights is an abusive system invented by the rich to make themselves richer. Now, I don't question the fact that rich people can abuse whatever system they're in order to be rich. It's only a very naive person that doesn't understand socialistic or communistic countries that think that everybody there is treated the same. But it's interesting, I think, from our point of view, to notice that regardless of what those philosophies might think concerning private property, that God viewed the matter of one's property as a matter of basic order in society, so that when he incorporated the fundamental laws that were going to govern the people of Israel, this is one of the 10 basic commandments upon which that larger law of Moses contained in Leviticus and Deuteronomy is based. So it is something that I think is important and of value to us, and that we should realize this and respect its place in God's order for civilized society. So we look at this command, you shall not steal. The Hebrew word that is used in this passage is the word ganab. The theological word book of the Old Testament defines it this way. It says, basically, the verb means to take that which belongs to another without his consent or knowledge. And it is restricted to acts of theft done secretly. Now, that does not mean that other acts of theft, such as armed robbery, that type of thing, are not also condemned in the old law. But this verb itself deals with that idea of taking something without the permission of another, and not necessarily by armed force or anything like that. And I believe that the reason for the use of this word is that it gets to the idea of that second part of the Ten Commandments, the first several being that you shall love the Lord your God with all yourself, all your mind, all your strength. And the second part are extensions of the second great commandment, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, is that the use of thou shalt not steal gets to the idea that you are just harming your neighbor. Without his knowledge, you're trying to harm him in terms of violating that which is his and taking that which is his. Now, all the English translations that you might use, I did not find a single one in looking through a list of them that did not use the word steal in their English Bibles for this command. So that's pretty universally accepted. The law of Moses itself specifically condemned a number of acts that would be considered a form of theft, and we will look at that in just a moment. Interesting enough, the Greek word that is translated steal is the Greek word klepto, and as is often the case with Greek, you can see the word coming into English and our use of it. A compulsive stealer of something is called a kleptomaniac. And so that's where that comes from. Now, there are only 9 places in the New Testament that use the word steal, and 4 of them, 3 in the in parallel passages in the Gospels. So ultimately, we will get to these on Wednesday night in our study of the fourfold gospel. Are Jesus asserting the commandments of the 10 commandments? And the 4th is by the Apostle Paul in Romans 13 and verse 9, where he does essentially the same and endorses the commandments, the basic commandments in the second part of the 10 commandments: thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, those commandments on the Christian life. And so I think that's a pretty simple thing. And so the interesting thing, though, is as we look at these laws, is to look at the penalties for the violation of the law. And one of the things that is interesting is that compared to the cultures that surrounded them and other cultures of the ancient world, in the law of Moses, the penalty for theft was not near as severe as how other cultures would treat it. And so, for instance, most of the other cultures around them, the Arabian cultures, others that would have been descendants of Abraham, actually, the penalties that were very common in those areas were simply the cutting off of the hand or the arm that the person used to steal something. But in other cultures, it was much more severe. In the Egyptian culture, if you were a thief, you were staked alive to the ground and just left there till you die for everybody to see. So it was pretty severe. And if you look those kind of things up on the internet, you'll find a whole list of how different cultures, treated the theft of property. The normal law of Moses penalty for theft was a twofold restoration of what was stolen. For instance, in Exodus chapter 22 and verse 7, what it says is, if a man gives his neighbor money or goods to keep for him and it is stolen from the man's house, if the thief is caught, he shall pay double. And so the reasoning behind the law of Moses was, if out of your greed and your desire to have that which belongs to another, you steal this much and you get caught, it's going to cost you what you steal plus that amount out of your own. So you're going to lose an amount equal to what you were stealing. So if you stole one of your neighbor's sheep, it was going to cost you 2 sheep if you were caught. That type of thing. Now, in the law of Moses, there are 2 specific forms of theft that were punishable by death. The normal penalty was pay it back twice. The first of those is kidnapping, which is literally the stealing of another human being. And so in Exodus chapter 21 and verse 16, it says, he who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. So notice that even if the man, the kidnappee, I guess is the way we say it, the person kidnapped is rescued, the kidnapper is still put to death. And of course, if the individual can't be rescued, but the kidnapper is apprehended and caught, then the death penalty still applied in that regard. So that type of theft, the theft of another human being, was penalized more severely than simple theft. And interestingly enough, I think the Old Testament, by example, by a story that it tells, demonstrates that that what is involved with kidnapping that is punishable by death is that attempt to gain at the cost of another. You kidnap a person to sell them as a slave. You kidnap a person for some other matter of personal vengeance or something like that. And the reason why I say that is that there is one case of what we would call kidnapping in the Old Testament that is actually basically celebrated and treated in a very positive way, and that's in 2 Kings chapter 11 and verse 2. And this is when the son of Ahaziah is kidnapped. Ahaziah was the king of Judah, and he died. And his mother, the queen mother, Athaliah, usurped the throne, which should have gone to her grandson. But she tried to kill all of her grandchildren to secure the throne for herself. And in 2 Kings 11 and verse 2, it says, "But Josheba, the daughter of King Joram, the sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in the bedroom, and so they hid him from Athaliah, and he was not put to death." And so, and ultimately, the story is not the central part of this lesson, of course. She took him to the priest, and the priest raised him. And when he became of age, the priest led a rebellion against his grandmother and put her to death. The grandson took the throne of his father. And obviously, if you say, well, technically that was a kidnapping, but it was a kidnapping for the purpose of sparing the life of one who should be king in order to get them to the throne. And so we can see there that the circumstances are really what matters. The kidnapping that is condemned and was punishable by death was that of being done for one's personal means or personal gains or personal desires. The second one that is punishable by death is the theft of devoted things. And an example of that is given in Joshua. It is the story of Achan. You remember that story where they're told to take the city of Jericho, and God said, "Everything in it is dedicated to me. Don't take it for your personal use. You'll get spoils later." Other battles, they would take the spoils, but this is dedicated to me. And Achan took some of the things and hid them in his tent. And in Joshua 7 and 11 says, "Israel has sinned and they have transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, and they have taken some of the devoted things. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things." And so Joshua went through a process led by God, and Achan is identified as the thief. And in Joshua 7:25, Joshua says, "Why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day." And all Israel stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire after he had stoned them with stones. And so because of the theft of the devoted things, they were put to death. There's one other interesting thing about the penalties of the law of Moses. And actually this is a removal of a penalty from a prior law in the law of Moses, in the Ten Commandments, is that in Exodus 22 and verse 2, it says, if a thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there will be no blood guiltiness on his account. And so what the law said is if you are protecting your property from the thief and you strike them in such a way that they die, you are not considered a murderer, and there is no blood guiltiness. The thief's family does not have the right to have an avenger of death and to come after you because they were the wrongdoer and you were simply defending what was yours. I think, again, because of our culture today, that is very interesting, because oftentimes the family of criminals get incensed. If someone takes the criminal's life in the process of committing the crime, they want them to be treated as a murderer. And the law of Moses said, no, that person is not a murderer. The guilt is on the thief in that regard, and their death is their own consequence. So those are the penalties that are involved in the law of Moses. And the only other thing I wanted to point out is that there are other specific types of actions that would fall under this thou shalt not steal, other than simply breaking into one's house and taking the property of another when they're not there. The idea of fraud is a form of theft, and the Old Testament really identifies two of those. The first is theft by deception. In Leviticus 19 and verse 11, you shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. The idea there is theft can occur not just by sneaking in the middle of the night and taking something which is not theirs. Some people steal by tricking people, dealing falsely with them. And then, specifically, what is condemned is deceptive weights and measures. In Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, you shall do no wrong in judgment in the measurement of weight or capacity. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, a just hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt. And so, you know, nobody goes to a butcher hardly anymore, but the old illustration was the butcher that had the heavy thumb. That if you ordered a pound of lunch meat, you got 14 ounces of it and the weight of his thumb as he laid it on there, so that you were paying for one thing, getting another. That is deception. That's having an unjust measurement, an unjust balance. And so how far that goes and where you would draw the line on that, I think we are all aware in our modern society that we have to deal with that all the time. Go to the grocery store and you think you're buying a box of cereal, but that's big, until you open it and realize that at least 1/4 of it is air, and that type of thing. How far do you go with that? Well, I think from a personal standpoint, what it's saying is if you are the one that is God's person and you are dealing with other people, you deal with them fairly. To try to deceive them, and people justify that all the time. Well, business is business. Well, business may need business, but God's person does not do business in such a way to try to take that which is others simply by deception. And then the second category, I wish I had a better word. I tried to think, well, what's a better word for this? And so I just simply ended up using the word manipulation. But it's found in Deuteronomy 19 and verse 14. You shall not move your neighbor's boundary mark, which the ancestors have set, and your inheritance, which you will inherit in the land that the Lord your God gives you to possess. And so, going back to the practices when the inheritances were given, the boundaries were often set, and sometimes all the boundary was a pile of stones set someplace that lined up with something else. And modern surveyors do it with stakes and so forth. And in this part of Ohio, you can still find in farmers' fields little stone obelisks that were actually surveyed shortly after the American Revolution, probably. And many times if you go to a county courthouse and look at the properties that are there, they talk about the Marker Act and this and that. Well, in ancient days, it might have been the pile of stones that was erected. And so he's saying, you can't gain property simply by manipulating the law that says this is the boundary, so you go in and move the boundary. So that you end up with more than what you should have had. The New Testament, and then we'll close. It basically treats it in exactly the same way. As I mentioned earlier, both Jesus and the Apostle Paul repeated a number of the second part of the Ten Commandments. You do no murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. Endorsing them. Jesus in the Gospels, of course, and Paul in Romans chapter 13. And I think even more than that, the Apostle Paul made it clear that stealing was not consistent with the Christian life, because the Christian's life should be characterized by living in accordance with the first two great commandments. And stealing is definitely a violation of the command that you should love your neighbor as yourself. Ephesians 4 and verse 28, Paul specifically says, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor. Honest labor is how a Christian gains the things that he needs for this world. Performing with his own hands what is good, so that he may have something to share with one who has a need. Notice, it is honest labor for the purpose of being able to put the second great commandment into practice in our lives. And that is what Paul commends to us in the Ephesian letter. So there's not much that is said in either the Old or the New Testament beyond those simple words, you shall not steal. But the simple fact is that there is really not much more that needs to be said. We just should not do it under any circumstances. So appreciate your attention to that. Brother Cliff has the prayer, and then we will be dismissed to the Bible.